everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining our monthly Conscious Dating Teleseminar. And tonight our topic is Conscious Dating, Practical Tips for the First Three Dates.
To get the study guide for this program, please go to www.consciousdating.com/tips, TIPS.htm.
I'm Frankie Dorn, the president of Relationship Coaching Network, and my co-presenter, as you have probably guessed, is David Steele. And David's the founder of Relationship Coaching Institute and the author of Conscious Dating, Finding the Love of Your Life in Today's World. The first three dates can often be the most challenging for singles because the decision you make whether to continue dating a new person is often based on initial reactions or unsubstantiated feelings. And how do you know if you've given your date a fair chance to demonstrate their mate potential? On the other hand, are you so infatuated that you avoid seeing the obvious red flags that make this date a poor partnership choice? So this teleseminar will reveal how to maneuver through those difficult first three dates to find the partner you really want. And tonight we're going to talk about the purpose of first dates, and why you need to have as many of them as possible, the best structure for the first three dates, including length of the date and the best dating venues. We're going to talk about the sorting and screening skills you need to use on your first three dates. We'll talk about safe dating practices for both men and women. We'll also touch on the top five signs that your date is definitely not a match, and the top seven signs that your date is a keeper. So before we talk about the purpose of the first three dates, I want to set the groundwork for dating in general. And dating is any social activity performed as a pair or even as a group with the aim of each assessing the other's suitability as a potential partnership in an intimate relationship. And the word refers to the act of agreeing on a time and a date when a pair can meet and engage in social activity. And this creates the opportunity to assess that suitability. So understanding this concept is important because inherently it implies that there are no obligations or expectations by either party. It's simply an exploratory experience with no further action or commitment being required. Unless, and here's the key, unless both parties choose to continue the assessment process. A good analogy for dating is picking the best fruit in a supermarket. Okay, just because you handle a melon and sniff it doesn't mean you're obliged to buy it and take it home. So I think it's important to realize that you're simply checking this person out and you're checking this melon out in this example to determine its suitability for your consumption. So this means that you really should, in fact, need to handle several melons before you select the one you like the best. And so when either party to the date lacks this basic understanding of the purpose of dating, there will be some problems and misunderstandings. And what I find with people who've been through the conscious dating program and who understand this concept, you really do have a distinct advantage because you've got so much more awareness about the process than the average person. And so with knowledge comes responsibility. So when you encounter behavior that has a genesis and a lack of understanding, I think it's really important that you share your viewpoint with your date because they'll either be receptive to this new concept of conscious dating and all that, you know, it means, or they won't be. And their reaction alone will be very revealing to you. Going back to the purpose of dating, don't look at dating as a series of dates, but view each date as a single, isolated occurrence. And then based on the outcome of each date, both parties will decide whether there will be another date. And based on the outcome of that next date, you'll both determine whether there will be another date, and so on and so on. As you embark on your conscious dating journey, remember this foundation of one date at a time. And then if you get lost, just, you know, take a deep breath and get ready to start squeezing. Let's get back on to the subject of the first three dates because they do serve specific functions, and David's going to reveal the purpose of the first few dates.
So, a common theme that we've discussed during some of our previous seminars is that many singles, when they're dating, they lack confidence and they fear rejection. And the main reason they feel that way is because they have unrealistic expectations about the outcome of their dates. So like Frankie said, if you keep in mind that you're just assessing somebody's suitability one date at a time, you'll be less likely to become concerned about rejection. You know, you're being the chooser here. You need to be the chooser. That's one of the most important principles of conscious dating. And you will not have vested any emotion or expectation in the outcome one way or the other. You're not being attached. So being unattached to outcomes will make it easier to date. And think about it. How many people do you need to scout, sort, screen, and test in order to find your soulmate? Do you really think that the first time will work? How about, you know, the second time? How about the third person you date? How about 30, 40, 50 people, 100? You know, I've talked to people that dated, you know, hundreds of people, literally, before they found their soulmate. Being unattached to outcomes will make it easier to date and to practice scouting, sorting, screening, and testing. The more you practice or experience something, the more confident you become, are able to repeat the process. So if you resign yourself to, you know, I might have to date 100 or more people in order to find my soulmate, then this person is just 1 out of 100. It's not like, you know, you have to make this be the one. So the purpose of the first 3 dates, in addition to assessing whether you want to move on to a next date, is to gain confidence about being authentically you in a dating situation and to be the chooser.
A lot of people are very confident and very authentic in their workplace or when they're with friends. But when they get in a dating situation, all of a sudden, they're very unsure. They feel very self-conscious. You know, you can say you're confident in other areas, but in a dating situation, that's really where a lot of people need to gain the practice.
Right. So if you are listening to this seminar, chances are you're here for a reason. You're here because you need to learn and practice this. And I think we all can learn and practice some aspect of our life, but certainly for dating. So the second purpose of the first 3 dates is to simply practice dating and social skills. And when you think about it, finding your life partner is a relationship goal. Any relationships you have, any relationship experiences you have are going to help you along the way on those goals. So it is absolutely not wasting your time. Meeting and dating 100 possible candidates is absolutely not wasting your time because, number one, you need to go through all those people in order to find your soulmate. It's not going to happen the first time. And number two, you're getting lots and lots of practice. And life is teaching you lessons. And that's the way life works. It, you know, brings the lessons to you until you've got them and learned them and, you know, you're ready for the next step. So relationship skills, dating skills involve what? They involve things like initiating contact with people. You know, if you're really shy and you have trouble doing that and you wait for people to contact you, you are not being the chooser. You need to be the chooser, be able to initiate contact with people that you want to meet. Introducing yourself, making conversation, being aware of the opportunities that come into your life. Maybe your soulmate is this person that drops their keys, and you pick up their keys, and you hand it to them, and you smile, and life just gave you an opportunity. Just plop your soulmate into your lap, right in front of you in the grocery store. But you need to recognize that opportunity, so that's what this skill is about. And being able to seize that moment and be present. If you're thinking about the future, you're thinking about the past, or you're in your head about something, or even worse, you have your iPod on with the earphones and you're just tuning out the rest of the world, then you're going to hand this wonderful person back their keys and you will have missed that opportunity. So things like keeping your boundaries, especially your sexual boundaries, flirting, you know, being the chooser, patience, delaying gratification. You know, it's not going to happen all at once. It's not going to happen in a day. And people don't like to be pushed. They don't like to be expected to be ahead of where they are. So practicing being present and being patient and delaying gratification and letting things evolve is an important skill. And being authentic is an important skill. So those are examples of skills that you can practice when you're dating that will certainly support you when you are in a relationship. And the third purpose of the first three dates is to make you more proficient at sorting and screening and testing based on your vision and your values and your requirements. So in conscious dating, we strongly advocate that you be very clear about who you are and what you want. And then when you date, you are sorting and screening and testing for that. And this is where you get practice in doing that. You translate what you know, the knowledge, into action. So the final purpose, purpose number four of the first three dates, is to help you become attuned to your inner voice. Part of being authentic is to be authentic with yourself. Be honest with yourself. Be aware of what your truth is so that you can speak it and stand up for it. So to pay attention to your own inner voice, your intuition, whatever you want to call it, you know, your truth, and to act on it, which is an important relationship skill as well. So, Frankie?
Yeah, absolutely, David. Well, let's talk about the best structure and venues for the first three dates. Now, I think the first three dates really need to be short, focused, and fun. Why short and focused? Well, since the foundational purpose of dating is to assess a date's compatibility to move on to the next date, you really don't need a lot of time to make that decision. And I think everyone can decide within 30 to 45 minutes whether you want to arrange a next date. And remember, it doesn't mean you're not deciding whether this is your future life partner. All you're deciding is, do I want a next date with this person? Yes or no? But you also have to be aware that the person you're dating also has the same choice. So you may want to continue, but that person may not want to. And it's okay, because it just means that you're not a match. So don't worry about it. As we said earlier, don't be attached to the outcome. It's just a date. It serves a lot of purposes. Keeping it short is also around this whole idea of, I just imagine spending 3 to 4 hours on a dinner date with someone who's obviously not a match for you. It's so uncomfortable. It's so difficult to try and make conversation with someone and you're stuck at dinner. You can't just be rude and get up in the middle of dinner, especially if they're a very polite person and their behavior is very acceptable. At this early stage of dating, you just want to be on purpose. You just want to be practicing your social and dating skills, gathering and gaining confidence, sorting, screening, and testing, and listening to your inner voice without spending a lot of time on these dates. And as you start to move through the dating cycle with someone, you can spend increasingly longer amounts of time on these dates. And it's a process, and it takes time. And you really don't need to spend large chunks of time in a short period of time getting to know someone. And remember this, you're still in the melon patch, and there's lots of melons to squeeze, so don't pick the first one. And why should it be fun? Well, because life should be enjoyable, and finding a life partner is really an exciting experience. And if a date isn't fun, ask yourself, why not? Like, what's going on? You know, you're a conscious dater, and you need to be aware of any limiting thoughts or reasons why this particular date is not fun. You know, if you, maybe you're two incompatible people. Who knows? So let's just go to the first date.
We recommend that it's no longer than 45 minutes. You know, this is like a getting together for coffee or something. And most people can stand 45 minutes even with somebody who is not compatible with them. If you meet somebody who's so totally obnoxious or disturbing or unsettling, you know, you can simply get up and go. Say, well, it was nice meeting you. I don't think this is a match. And so I'm going to get going. Thank you. Goodbye. And, you know, don't be afraid to do that. It's not rude. Like Frankie said, if you're in the middle of dinner, that might be hard to do. But if you're just having coffee, it's not a big deal. Say, well, got to go to work. Thank you. You're under no obligation to stay. And it is not rude to get up and say, well, you know what? I realize this is not a match. We're not a match. And it's nothing personal. And you don't have to put it that way. And you can communicate it very, very graciously. Have an exit strategy. Really be clear going in if you are wanting to leave, to break it off. How are you going to do that? Having a plan always makes it easier for you to execute the plan. If you have to make it up without having it pre-planned, then it's a lot more awkward. You have to think about it, but how can you think when you're engaging this person and all you can think of is how you want to leave? So have an exit strategy and plan what you want to say. And it can be as simple as, you know what, as we're talking, I realize that this is just not a match, but I really enjoy meeting you, and I wish you well. So thank you, handshake, and goodbye. Whatever it is, just plan it out. Have your exit strategy planned, what you're going to say, what you're going to do. And it's helpful to go into the situation giving yourself permission to do that. You are going to check this person out. You want to screen them out rather than screen them in. And I want to explain that. If you haven't heard this before, I think this is mentioned in the book Conscious Dating, that screening somebody out is finding a reason to say no. As you're meeting them and as you're talking, you know, is the chemistry there? Does it look like your requirements would be met? Does this feel good to you? Does it feel right to you? And if it doesn't, then find a reason to say no. Any reason. You're looking for any reason to say no to screen them out. Why? Because, you know, you want to get through this efficiently so you can get on to the next one, because you have about 100 people to meet before you find your soulmate. Now, screening in is the opposite. That's where you want to give people a second chance. You want to give people every chance and the benefit of the doubt. Well, maybe they're just having a bad day, or maybe I'll give them a chance. I'll see them again. And, you know, you have a hard time saying no, and you don't want to say no because if it doesn't feel good to you, you don't want to hurt their feelings or whatever it might be. So we recommend that you go to this first date with the goal of screening out. You want to, as quickly as you can, find reasons why it's not going to work. And it's an absolute win if you do. It is not a waste of time.
David, I'd like to give an example of one of my clients. This whole concept of saying no and recognizing, sometimes you can't recognize that you're incompatible, but sometimes it's like having an elephant in the room with you. You can't ignore the obvious. And so this client had done a lot of work with me around her requirements. So she knew them really cold. She knew exactly what she was looking for. And two of her requirements were generosity of spirit and, you know, a financial soundness in the relationship. So she met this guy, and they met at a coffee shop. She arrived a couple minutes late, and he was sitting there, and he pulled out a bottled water that he had obviously brought with him from his knapsack. And then he said to her, if you'd like something, you know, go ahead and get it. I'll wait here. She just looked at him, and in that instant, she realized that this was a guy who wasn't very generous of spirit because, I mean, he brought his water. Maybe he wasn't too financially sound. And, you know, it's not that she couldn't afford a water. It was just that it all smacked of being stingy and was not what she was looking for. So within literally 5 minutes, she just said to him, you know, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming down here to meet me, but I don't feel we're a match, and I wish you luck, and she left.
That's a great story.
Yeah, she had the courage of listening to her inner voice and being really clear on what was important to her, what her requirements were.
Right, so if she were practicing screening in, she would give him a second chance and then figure, oh, well, maybe he just, you know, has special water that he has to have, and and she would just have more experiences that reinforce how stingy he is. But she screened out, so within 5 minutes she figured out, hey, you know, this is not what I'm looking for. That's an absolute win.
So there's a fine line you have to walk. It's a lot of it is intuition, listening to your inner voice, paying attention, understanding what you want, looking for the clues. All of that comes to bear. So there's no real hard and fast rules around this. Just trust yourself. And this is especially true with women. Say no when you feel like saying no. Don't feel coerced or obligated to say yes if that's not what you want. So let's talk about the venues for the first date. Think about what you can do within a 45-minute time frame. There's not a lot, okay? But you can grab a cup of coffee. You can take a stroll in a public park. So my recommendations are for the first date is to meet in a coffee shop or a public park and just take a walk. And the rationale for this is, in summary, you're assessing and you're practicing. And Rome wasn't built in a day, you know. And if this is the person for you, Time will reveal that he or she is, so there's no need to force it or rush the process. And keep in mind that you are the chooser. And if the two of you like each other, defining the parameters of the date in advance and will keep you both wanting, anticipation is a very good thing. It's great to say, you know what, I really enjoyed talking with you, meeting you. I have another commitment, as I mentioned before we met, and I'd like to see you again. Now it's up to the other person to say yes or no, and then you set the time for the next date. So it's really simple. So let's talk about the second date. It should be, in my mind, no more than 90 minutes, and shorter is even better. And in this date, the second date, you're focusing more on your date's interests and some of the values if you can pull those out. But you have to do it briefly, not spend a lot of time and get into an interview process. You know, I often joke in my workshops that wouldn't it be great if you could just take out your list of requirements, say, okay, now, do you want children? Yes or no? Check. Are you financially sound? Yes or no? Check. You can't do that, unfortunately. So you've got to have a really light touch, just introducing these topics if it's appropriate. You know, talking about some of your requirements, that type of thing. For example, children, there's ways to weave that into the conversation. So it means that you need a venue that's conducive to talking. So a movie or a theatrical event is not a good place for an early date for that reason alone, because you can't talk. You're sitting there and you're watching something, and at the end of it, you have, you know, a conversation about what? About the movie or about the event. And that's really not why you're having these early dates. So again, in terms of venues, think about what you can do in less than 90 minutes that permits conversation. It could be a walk in the park. It could be bicycling. It could be skating. It could be a trip to an aquarium. You know, that type of thing that also pulls out some interest in your date. So the rationale for this is by including an activity, it'll make the time go by faster, because now this is the second time that you've met this person, and you're spending maybe up to 90 minutes with them. So you've got a lot more material for conversation if there happen to be lags in the discussion, because you're at the aquarium. Oh my gosh, look at that orca. You know, there's a lot more to talk about, and you won't feel as uncomfortable as you might if you were sitting across a table in the coffee shop. Plus, it's also another way to gauge a person's interest by collaborating on where you can meet for a second date. And I think the only thing that's really important here is that you be sure you define the time parameters in advance so you can say, yeah, I'd love to meet you. How about we meet for an hour and a half? After that, I have a commitment or I have to do this or do that. So they know that it has a finite end to this date. So let's talk about the third date. You can see they're getting a bit longer because the third date, I'm saying, it should be no longer than 2 hours and should focus on interests and values. You can do some more probing around your requirements and you can allow more time to chat. So some of the venues that might facilitate that might be a trip to a museum, maybe wine tasting, could go to the zoo. You could even go for lunch because a luncheon time frame is much shorter than dinner. So that would really work well for a third date. And the rationale for the structure of the third date is by now you've decided you want to get to know this person a bit more, and in order to do that, you need to allocate some time to do it. Plus, by this time, you should feel a bit more at ease with each other, so that spending 2 hours in one another's company is not going to be too difficult to manage. So, David, would you like to talk about sorting and screening?
Sure. I'd just like to recap a little bit. So the first date here, we're talking 45 minutes, public place, getting a cup of coffee, walking in the park. You want to have a place to go. You want to be able to break it off after 45 minutes. And you never know who this person is. And what you found out about them online or talking on the telephone, the reality in person can be very, very, very different. So 45 minutes, plan for that and leave yourself an out. Second date, 90 minutes, no more than that. Shorter is better. And you can do something that you share an interest. And anything you do, like, you know, taking a walk in the park or going to a museum or something like that, that might be a shared interest, like Frankie was saying, you know, it gives you something more to talk about. And you're taking the focus off of giving each other the third degree and checking each other out, which can be, you know, a little bit of pressure. So that's the second date. And then the third date, no more than 2 hours. Going to lunch is fine. Museum, sitting in the park and talking, all that's just fine. Make sure it's no more than 2 hours. And here you are focusing on your interests and your values, your requirements, needs, and wants. You're really, you know, talking more in depth about who you are, what you're looking for, who this other person is, sharing your life story and things like that. So just a very, you know, simple plan for what to do in the first date, second date, and third date.
When a lot of people think a first date should be going out to dinner, that's fraught with a whole bunch of pitfalls. Because, first of all, there are still people out there who think that if they fork out a couple $100 on dinner, they're due something. And so you set up this whole dynamic where there's maybe a perceived obligation, and it can get kind of sticky. Plus, men feel that they have to pay for the meal. So by setting up your three dates so that there's not a lot of, it's not an expensive venture, none of the dates are expensive, the whole issue of money and who pays doesn't even enter into the scenario. By the time you want to move on to the fourth and fifth dates, you kind of have a sense and you can probably have the discussion around money. And I always recommend that the woman volunteer to pay half, that they go Dutch. Because for men, that's really well received. A man might say, no, you know, absolutely not. I want to pay and it's my pleasure to pay. But the fact that the woman has offered says a lot about her.
So let's talk about sorting and screening. Now, the four steps for conscious dating is scouting, sorting, screening, and testing. So you've scouted people to meet, you've found somebody, and you've arranged meeting them, and now you meet them, and you want to sort them. Well, chances are you've already sorted them in order to meet them, in order to determine if there's any potential here. Because sorting is what you do when you're looking through online profiles and maybe when you're asking some questions back and forth by email. Or if it's a blind date, sorting is what you do when you're asking your friend, well, who is this person? You know, tell me about them and I'll decide if I want to accept this blind date or not. So sorting happens very, very quickly and usually, well, almost always in advance of actually meeting somebody. Unless it's meeting somebody in line at the grocery store or some spontaneous meeting. And then screening is a process of collecting enough information to know if your requirements would be met. And a little earlier we talked about screening out versus screening in. I highly recommend screening out, which is finding a reason why this would not work as soon as possible. So you're looking for that, you're paying attention to that, as you're talking, you're listening for that. And screening in is giving people chances, trying to find ways that it could work, which is from a scarcity mindset. And we want to have an abundance mindset. There are millions, literally, millions of singles out there. I will find my soulmate. I don't have to settle. I don't know if this is it, and I want to find out pretty quickly. The thing is, if it's a fit, you will find that out pretty quickly. It'll feel right. It'll look right. It'll line up with what your head and your heart is saying. If it's not a fit, you will find that out pretty quickly because you'll have some red flags. You'll have some uncomfortable feelings. You'll have some thoughts or some feelings like, close but no cigar or, no, absolutely not. So if you listen to yourself, if you listen to your inner voice, if you pay attention to your intuition and your feelings and you're using your head and you're aware of your vision, requirements, needs, and wants, and you're comparing it with this person, you should know pretty quickly. Now, oftentimes, we think it's gray. It feels gray. Well, it could be or it could not be. I need more information. It's not a green light. It's not a red light. It's a yellow light. Well, if you need more information, that's what fine. You know, you can always have another date. But it's going to be short, and it's just going to be for the process of collecting more information. And that's what screening is about. So, as far as I'm concerned, the most important functions of the first three dates is screening, is collecting enough information to know if your requirements would be met. You don't need more than three dates to do that. After screening, you're getting into testing. And testing is more than information. It's getting an experience that your requirements might be met here. So this is where if somebody, you know, says they're a great dancer and you're looking for somebody who's a great dancer, well, you actually dance with somebody or, you know, things like that. You're testing the reality. So we want you to be the chooser. We want you to pay attention to your own inner voice and truth. We want you to practice scouting, sorting, screening, and testing, which means you're going to be conscious, you're going to be aware, you're going to look to screen out as soon as possible because you know there's millions of other singles out there and you want to meet as many of them as possible so that you can find your soulmate. And so that's what I want to say about sorting and screening and testing. Anything to add to that, Frankie?
No, I think that's great.
Okay.
So let's talk about safe dating practices for both men and women. And there's some general safety tips, and most people know what they are. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. But I think it's important to arrive and leave the venue using your own means of transportation. So don't arrange to be picked up at your home by a person you've never met or you know, this is a first date. It's just not a wise idea. If you're in a bar, mix or get your own drinks. And by mix, I don't mean you go behind the bar, but, you know, if you've got to pour some soft drinks into your drink, do it yourself and don't leave your drinks unattended. I mean, that's just common sense. Get your date's contact information, at least a telephone number. And tell a friend where you're going and make sure your date knows that you've spread the word a little bit about him or her. I mean, it's not so much an issue for men, but certainly for women. And then protect your valuables and keep your key personal information private. Don't reveal too much too soon. In terms of online safety tips, we actually did a whole teleseminar on online dating. I don't remember what month it was, David, but if you'd like the audio and the transcript, you can go to www.consciousdatingaudio.com. And you can look that one up. But for online safety, basically, you need to protect your security. So you never give anyone else your online password. And if someone asks for your password, report them to your online service provider. And if you think someone knows your password, change it. You need to protect your privacy. You know, surfing seems anonymous, but websites you visit gather your email addresses or other information. They can cookie you. So you really learn about the privacy and security features of your web browser and use them. Be cautious about revealing information that could identify you. If you give someone your listed phone number, it's really easy to do a reverse phone lookup, and so they can find your real name and your street address. And remember that when you meet someone you've chatted with online, you're really meeting them for the first time, and this is probably the biggest risk area for people because they think they know this person. You know, they may have chatted with them for several weeks or months. But really, you have to still use standard safety precautions because you don't know them. You know, this is the first time you're actually meeting them. So assume that what you know of them online is not true. And for your first meeting, pick a place that's public and neutral. And if you're traveling to visit them in their hometown or their neighborhood, you're the one who should pick the place that you want to meet. So you're comfortable. And, you know, you can do that last minute. You can say, well, I'll call you and let you know where I'd like to meet. So there's no real issues around that. So that just very briefly is some pretty common sense safety tips.
Very good, Frankie. And, you know, it occurs to me to mention my three levels of consciousness. Because if you're conscious, you're going to keep these in mind and do this. And pay attention and be cautious and take care of yourself and realize that you don't know who this person really is and, you know, just be prudent about it, even if you're a guy. And
absolutely.
If you're semi-conscious, this is where you believe you know what's what. You believe your own stories. So if you have it all built up in your head that this person is wonderful and trustworthy and you know what you're getting into, and you really believe that, it's a story you've created. It's not fact. You don't know yet because you haven't met him in person yet. It's not fact. So when you're semi-conscious, you believe you know, but you're just operating off of your assumptions.
That's right.
And when you're unconscious, you're not even paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, la-di-da-di-da-da-da. Oh, you want to get together for dinner on our first date? Okay, let's do that. You know, la-di-da-di-da-da. You know, you're not thinking at all. So stay conscious and please, you know, keep in mind these safety precautions. So we have our top five signs that your date is not a match. Number one, you have obviously different goals and visions. In conscious dating, we strongly advocate that you be very clear about who you are and what you want, so you know what your life vision is, you know what you want for a relationship, you know where you're going in life, and you want to find an aligned partner with that, and it's not a match if this person doesn't line up with that. Number two, your date exhibits behaviors that cause you concern. And if they're not paying attention to you, here they are, meeting you for the first time, evaluating you as a possible life partner, and they're looking around the room, they're looking at other people, they have a hard time making eye contact and listening to what you're saying. You know, if they're acting rudely or they're, you know, acting in a demeaning way, they're being patronizing or worse to you, you know, come on, get real. Pay attention to what's really going on here and react appropriately to that. For example, thank you very much, and, you know, nice to meet you, shake hands, get up and go. And number three is if your value system is different. And even if your goals are the same and your vision is the same, but you have very different value systems. For example, you know, I have a high value in being of service and making a difference in the world. And I can have the exact same goals and life vision of somebody that absolutely had no interest in making a difference in the world in terms of lifestyle and family and interests and all that other stuff. You know, if you don't share that with me, then our values are going to be, you know, so different. It's like being on different planets. So just because the planets might look the same doesn't mean that you're on the same planet. So if your value system is different, it's not a match. And number four, if your requirements would be unmet. Now, in sorting, screening, and testing, this is the number one thing that we want you to pay attention to. We want you to be so familiar with what your requirements are, you don't need a list. You don't need to write it down. You don't need to write it on the back of your hand. You know what they are. And you are looking for that, and you're listening for that, and you're observing, and you're intuiting, and if you're paying attention, you can figure it out pretty easily. So you're really focusing on the question of, you know, would my requirements be met in this relationship with this person from the get-go? And then top sign number five that your date is not a match is what they are saying and what they do doesn't seem to fit. And so if somebody presents themselves as being, you know, generous and you're at a place where you're being served coffee and pie in a coffee shop or something and they don't leave a tip, how generous are they? So, you know, pay attention to what they say, compare it with how they show up and what they do. And if it doesn't match, then run away screaming. It is just too common that people know what they want to be and they present you as they want to be or as they think you want them to be, but the reality is different. It is just too common, so please pay attention to that. So, Frankie, what are the top seven signs that your date is a keeper?
Well, these seven may or may not fit with your requirements, but I think what they do show is something about this person that's very important. The first one is that they keep agreements. So this is a person of their word. And when he or she tells you they will meet you at a specific time, you can set your watch on them. They'll be there. Okay, so don't be late. And so you can rely on these people to do what they commit to again and again. So it's proven what they say is what they do. And this reveals that they're conscientious, they're reliable, and they have integrity. And those are great traits in a partner. The second sign that your date's a keeper is if they are emotionally mature and responsible. And so this is a person who doesn't blame others or circumstances for their life situations. They accept accountability for their actions, and they're willing to self-examine, take responsibility, and importantly, to grow personally. These are people who can keep a job, they can manage their finances, and they can generally run their life without any help from you or anyone else. You know, they got it all together. The third sign is that they're honest. And not only do they treat people fairly and honestly, but they live by a code of ethics that demonstrates their integrity. And this is especially so when it comes to those sticky gray areas around money and people. And what they tell you about themselves actually matches with reality, and we've already talked about that. But this is you know, where they come from, this space of integrity. And the longer you know them, the more this is demonstrated. They're like an open book, and they don't mind if you flip through a few of the pages.
Right, so they don't say something, well, I don't really want to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. They're an open book. The fourth one is that they genuinely enjoy being with you, that they really like you. And that's something that's very important. These are the type of people that when they see you, their face lights up. Why? Because they want to be with you. They enjoy it. They enjoy your company. They enjoy who you are. And number five is they're a communicator and they're present. And we know from the communications map that there are two sides to the conversation. There's the speaker and there's the listener. And they both need to take turns. So when he or she is a listener, this person will pay very close attention to what you're saying because they're genuinely interested in what you have to say. And conversely, they'll expect you to do the same when it's their time to talk. So when you're with them, you know, you need to pay attention. And, you know, you can have a wonderful open communication style. Number six is they have a great relationship with family and friends. And if you think about this, anyone who has a sound relationship with his family and friends reveals good family values and has the potential to be an excellent partner. And even the best families can be taxing at times. So someone who remains connective and supportive of them as a person is a person who's going to stand by you in really tough times because they understand what commitment's about.
Right. So what makes you think if somebody has terrible relationships with their family that their relationship with you is going to be any better?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, that's not to say that there are circumstances where people have been or are estranged from their family, but if that's the case, you should see that they have a circle of friends that they're close to. Because
right.
The friends
have positive relationships in their life.
Exactly.
So they have a proven track record of good relationships.
Yeah. And then the final sign that this person's a keeper is they're emotionally available to you and they're confident. And a person who's confident in their own skin and who can express who they are and how they feel without worrying about what anyone else thinks, I think is a great catch. Because this is the person who will gradually open their heart to you because they love and trust you. And they won't get upset if you tell them you think Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie is sexy. They're confident. They know that you're with them because you want to be with them. So those are the seven signs of a keeper.
One thing that I have noticed with the sort of the entire approach, David and Frankie, is that it's very hard to find anyone who meets these, you know, criteria. My requirements and the other things that you've laid out in various teleconferences, I have to say that I'm a weeder out, and I rarely get involved in relationships. I haven't had a lot of relationships. And my concern is that I'm weeding too many people out, and then this system allows me to really weed people out. So it seems like there, you know, there are very few candidates left.
Well, good.
If any. I mean, this seems like it's just holding people to an extremely high standard.
Well, good.
And I mean, which means I'm going to be alone the rest of my life.
Well, not quite. Let me respond to that. You know, first of all, screening out is a good thing. So if you're meeting people and you're finding reasons why this would not work for you, then that is an absolutely positive thing. It's not a problem. Now, it's understandable to be discouraged and say, well, gosh, I'm not meeting anybody that I want to hang out with. Well, I would ask you about your attraction venues in the Law of Attraction. You know, where are you looking? Where are the venues that you are hanging out? And family and friends can introduce you to people. The attraction venues, as described in conscious dating, there's four levels of attraction venues. Level one and level two is where most singles meet other singles.
Mm-hmm.
In public settings or on the internet or other generic single settings. And those are the lowest likely scenarios. It doesn't mean it can't work. It absolutely can work. But it's just the odds are lower and it requires more time and more effort. So the higher likelihood scenarios are level three and level four venues. That's where you share a strong interest with everybody there, or that's where you are a member of a community, and these people are your people, and you really enjoy hanging out with them as friends and as a community. So the people that have trouble meeting compatible people that don't meet their requirements, that they wouldn't really want to hang out with, I find they are generally, you know, not looking at level three and level four venues. They're generally looking on the internet. They're generally relying on, you know, singles events and things like that. So the Law of Attraction is very, very, very real. If you have an idea, a clear idea of who you want to meet, then where are they? And go hang out where they are and go look where they are. Don't expect them to find you if all you're doing is searching on the internet. Yeah. Now, the other thing that happens is we screen people out of fear. They can be great candidates for us, possibly our soulmate, but we cross them off the list because, you know, we're afraid of getting close or of something superficial, like how tall they are, or what color hair they have, or, you know, something that's not really related to our values and our vision and requirements and all that. So you might take a look at that. You know, are you crossing off people that could be good candidates? In general, it's a good thing to screen out. And in general, most people are not unrealistic. What I've found is that people are actually, they have the bar too low because they're so afraid of being alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. Can you give us an example of something you're looking for in a partner that you're having trouble finding?
I would say it's not one thing, it's the combination of, I've talked about this I think on other calls, of finding someone who shares my love of nature and the outdoors and likes intellectual pursuits, is a kind person. So I'll often find men who have one or two, but not all three.
I'm going to assume that the three things that you mentioned are requirements.
Yes.
And it is a valid question that, well, is it really a requirement? And if the outdoors is not a requirement, I mean, for me, it's a requirement. To me, that's how I recharge. That's where I spend most of my free time. If you don't share that with me, we're not going to be hanging out all that much because I'm either working or I'm outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
So I relate to that, that's for sure. So you can always question, is this really a requirement or not, and then work with a coach or work with yourself in applying the test for requirements. But let's assume that the three things you're talking about, they are absolutely requirements, and you're looking for the combination. Well, I guarantee you the combination exists. It exists in lots of guys all over the country. So the question, seek and ye shall find. And if you have confidence and faith that it is there and you will find it, then you will. And if you have a fear that you won't, then the Law of Attraction is very funny this way. It'll push it away from you. It'll make it harder for you to find.
Jean asks, are you suggesting that I let the person know how long the date is going to be beforehand? I can see myself having a really great time and wanting to stay longer. Better to put the person on the spot and ask them if they want to go out on a second date, which is a question. So absolutely, you tell them beforehand. The date has a beginning and an end time, and you're very clear when you're setting it up what that is. And if you are having a great time, hopefully he's having a great time too, Jean, and you'll both express your interest in moving to the next date, or you won't. And so it's as simple as that. You know, if you want to see this man again, you say, I really enjoyed meeting you. I'd love to get together with you again. And, you know, he can say the same thing, and you either move forward together or you don't.
Hi. David, I've heard you say before and generally that it seems like you don't have the feeling that Internet dating is a very good way to sort, that you don't consider it a very high-level venue. And I just wondered why you feel that way. I'll tell you the way I'm looking at it is that, you know, we know the law of attraction is always working, and there are ways to use Internet dating that are conscious. I mean, we can be conscious about that just like we can about everything else, and we can screen out just like we can with everything else. So I'm wondering why you seem to look at it that way.
Well, several reasons. Number one, Internet dating is extremely time-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
It takes hours and hours and hours to go through profiles and correspond with people and get together for first meetings. And number two, a lot of people that are on the Internet, a lot of people out there in general, are not honest about themselves. They are older than what they say on their profiles. They are heavier than they say on their profiles, and on and on and on and on. It cultivates a lot of inauthenticity. And then another reason is that the law of attraction certainly can work on the Internet. And I'm not against Internet dating. I think it's great, and I think it's a good tool. I wouldn't rely on it as the only. So if you are living your vision, and you have communities in your life that you hang out in, and you have activities that you participate in where you are connecting with other people, then you're not relying on Internet dating totally, and you're allowing the law of attraction to help you. If all you're doing is focusing on the Internet, then the law of attraction is not going to help you because you are hiding behind your computer. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I'm really glad I asked you. I'm glad to hear that because I see it the same way. I don't want to sit there and search profiles. I really basically just look at it as put up a profile and see who shows up writing me, and I respond to about 5% of them. I mean, it's just, I'm very, very selective, and I'm living my life, but it's just up there. Allow the law of attraction to do whatever it wants to do with it.
I think that's a great way to use Internet dating. It's like you're putting the fishing pole and bait out there. You're letting the world know that you're available, and, you know, you're screening what comes your way, and you're not spending hours and hours and hours in front of your computer looking through millions and millions of profiles. You know, you're living life, which is how the law of attraction can help you.
Exactly. And I'm not getting into ongoing conversations with people. I'm not looking for a pen pal.
Right.
I'm not going to write somebody for weeks like some of these people want to do.
Right, you're not dragging it out.
Yeah.
And actually a tip about online dating is the sooner you get to real life in-person meeting, the better. Elaine from Atlanta, who asks, what about a first meeting with someone who lives in another city? Well, I think we covered that in terms of the safety. If you're going to another city to meet someone, you're there probably for a weekend, so your first three dates would be in rather quick succession because you want to make the most of the time you're there. But I still would keep them brief and certainly keep the safety factor, keep that really top of mind. And then Sebastian asks, how much time to wait between a first date, a second date, and second date, and between the second and third?
I think that what you're looking for is to give yourself time to assimilate the experience of this person and really decide if getting together with them again is a good idea. And it's fine to say, you know, I'll call you. And
if you
set the intention, you know, I wouldn't actually create the second date right at the first date. I would say, well, I've enjoyed meeting you. I'd like to see you again. What do you think? And, you know, I'll be in touch. And give yourself some time to assimilate the experience. So how much time do you need? You know, a day, a week, a month? You know, I would guess at least a few days before you contact them again and get together again. And then when you do, it's going to take a few days to coordinate that. So you're talking at least half a week to a week. So in my mind, probably in the beginning, weekly contacts, like for the first three dates, is just fine. It's spaced out. It's not too close. It's not too far away. What do you think, Frankie?
I agree. I think around a week is fine, and I think that you need to share that with your date, and especially if it's going to be longer. For example, if you're going out of town for 10 days and you say, well, you know, I'll give you a call, but you don't say, I'll give you a call in 10 days when I'm back from my trip, because they're going to think, what the heck happened? This is someone who made a commitment and was lying. So whatever you do, just be clear about what's going on. But I think a week is a good amount of time.
And then at the end of the date, he said to me, so should we do this again? To say at the end of the date, you know we're not a match or whatever. I have a hard time when that comes up so suddenly to be composed and say, I always say thank you for dinner, but it's like I realize, you know, whatever the phrase is, like, we're not a match or we have different goals. I find I have a very hard time with that in the moment, saying exactly what the reality is. Thank you very much, and I wish you the best, you know.
Well, Betty, that's why you need to have your exit strategy planned, and you need to stand in front of a mirror.
And rehearse.
You need to say it. Yeah, you need to say it 20 times until it just...
But wait a minute. She already said it. So say it again, Betty.
I said it to you on the phone because we're not on a date, but it happened last night where he said to me,
I want to hear it again. Okay, I'll play him, all right? Well, Betty, should we do it again?
Well, David, I actually feel because of the conversation we had tonight that I think we have different life visions and that I don't think we're a match.
That's good. In my opinion, it's way too much information. I think you can keep it simple. I'm sorry. I don't think we're a match. Period. End of
short sentence. And sweet.
Short.
Very
and
short.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And the easier it is to remember and say, the easier it will be to do.
Right, right.
So let's try that again. Well, Betty, great having dinner with you. Do you think we should do this again?
You know, David, I really just don't think we're a match.
Oh, so sorry to hear that. Okay, well, here's your corner. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Now, my wish for you and for everybody is to you be the chooser and you say this first. You don't wait for the other person to say it. Well, do you want to get together again? Or, gee, I really like to see you again. You don't wait for that. You decide, you be the chooser, and as soon as you humanly get to the decision in your own mind, which hopefully would be as quick as possible, you go ahead and say, you know what, it was really nice meeting you, but I don't think we're a match. So don't be reactive, be the chooser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, May from London asks, how do men really feel about being pursued by a woman? So David, you're the man.
I love it. I love being pursued by a woman now, but of course it depends upon what kind of woman you're looking for and what kind of gender roles you have in mind for a relationship. If a guy likes to be macho and likes to be in charge and be the dominant one, he's not going to like a woman going after him. But, you know, if you know, you're like me and you like a more equal relationship, and shy guys just love it when a woman goes after him, and because the hardest things they have is to be able to take the initiative and to express interest. So they just love it if somebody expresses interest in them. So if you're a woman, my advice to you, I hesitate to say that word, but I'll say it anyway, my advice to you is go ahead and be honest and go ahead and let a guy that you're interested in know that you're interested.
And then stop right there. Don't do anything else.
Right. Don't chase them down.
Exactly. Exactly. Because men still like the chase. They want to know that you're interested. But as soon as they get that, then they want to chase.
Well, then if nothing else, you want them, you want to give them the opportunity to let you know if they're interested in you as well.
Sure. We have one more question from Jean in Baltimore, which I think we should take. It says, what about phone calls in between the dates? I think that's appropriate as long as they're short, okay, because we're talking the first three dates. Don't get too wrapped up in 2 and 3 hour phone conversations where you can just talk about everything. Save some of that talking about everything for the face-to-face. And again, as a woman, I don't think it's appropriate. It's just going to come back to haunt you if you call the guy, you know, more than once, because it's going to smack of you being needy and pursuing him, and that's not a pretty picture.
Right. You want to take it slow, because you want to allow yourself to really integrate the experience of this person. Who are they really? What is your reaction to them for real? You need a little bit of time to get in touch with that. And you want to give it time to evolve. So, you know, weekly contacts, and you don't have to have any contact in between. Maybe just a few emails saying hi, or maybe an e-card, you know, Hallmark.com, send an e-card or something, let her know you're thinking about them. But you want to take it slow. And the definition of taking slow is that you give it time in between contacts. And there's always room later on to spend every waking moment together once you become a couple, but now is the time to take it slow in the first 3 days.
Absolutely.
Okay,
so let's go over the study guide. So on page 1, the purpose of the first dates, first is to gain confidence being authentic in a dating situation. The next is to practice dating and social skills. The third is to become proficient at sorting and screening. And the last one is to become attuned to your inner voice. Number 2, the best structure and venues for the first 3 dates, keep them short, focused, and fun. And the first date should be no longer than 45 minutes. You should always have an exit strategy, and the venues for the first date should be a place like a coffee shop or a public park. And the rationale is you're assessing and practicing, and there's no need to rush, because if this is the one, it will be revealed to you. So the second date should be no longer than 90 minutes, focuses on interests and values. The venues are parks, maybe bicycling or skating or an aquarium, anything that won't take longer than 90 minutes. And the rationale is you add an activity to make because the duration's a bit longer, to make the time go faster and to help with any conversation lags. And you're focusing again on more values. For the third date, should not be any longer than 2 hours. And the focus should be on interests and values, giving you more time to chat and have discussions around some of these things. And the venues could be things like museums or going to a wine tasting or to the zoo or even having lunch. And again, the rationale is you need more time to chat and explore similar interests and values. Item number 3, sorting and screening skills. The purpose of sorting and screening is to eliminate incompatible dates. So be single-minded about that. Pay attention to your inner voice. Follow the red flags. Don't bury them. Ask the questions you want answers to. Keep your goals in mind. Be confident about being a chooser. Make notes and compare the words with actions. Number 4, the safe dating practices. The general tips are use your own means of transportation, mix or get your own drinks, and don't leave drinks unattended. Get your date's telephone number. And then on page 3, tell a friend where you're going. Protect your valuables and your personal information. And then for online safety tips, protect your security and your privacy. Be cautious about revealing information that could identify you. And when you're meeting someone online, you are really meeting them for the first time. So act accordingly and don't forego safety precautions. And for your first date, pick a place that's public and neutral if you're traveling to visit them in their hometown. And number five, the top five signs that your date is not a match. You have obviously different life goals and life vision. Your date exhibits behaviors that cause you concern. Your value system is vastly different. Your requirements would be unmet. And finally, in that section, what is being said and what is done don't match. And then the top seven signs that your date's a keeper. First one is keeps agreements, is emotionally mature and responsible, is honest, enjoys being with you, is a good communicator and is present, has great relationships with family and friends, and then finally is emotionally available and confident. So David, that wraps it up for tonight.
Okay, very good. So, thank you for joining us, everybody.